Okay, this is Julie Obenreiter speaking to Joseph Arnold. What date is it, Joseph? July the 14th, 1987. We came to Newport Richey in August of 1945. We lived on Trouble Creek Road, East Trouble Creek Road, because that was where Roy's parents had some property, had several acres out there, and we lived there because we lived in their house for a while when we first came down, before we built our house next door. And I had never heard about Pine Hill before I came to go out there, because they came after me, and that was the first I ever knew of Pine Hill. And I didn't even then know what it was. It was called the Colored Quarters. Everybody called it the Colored Quarters. Even the black people that lived there called it the Colored Quarters then. And the impression I had of it, well, I'll tell you, it was quite an impression, because I went out there in the middle of the night. We went in on an old sand road that was so deep, it was like sugar sand. And we plowed through that in a truck, and we got out in front of the church. And then the man I was with, Mr. Lee Winthrop, he had come after me to go out and deliver a baby for his wife, Ellie Mae. And he said, now we've got to get out, we've got to walk. So we got out, and we walked through the graveyard all across there. And if you can imagine how that felt to me, a white girl, never been around any black people, going through a graveyard in the middle of the night. But he was very, very polite, and he kept saying, nobody, no harm will come to you, nobody will harm a hair of your head. He called me his white angel. And there we go, walking through there, tripping over stones, you know, tombstones, and it was a terrible thing. Roy was with me. He went with me. I remember that. We went out there to the house, and when we got to the houses were all built up on pillars, like way off the ground, 3-4 feet off the ground. That's probably why they never got taken away in a hurricane, because the winds could just go around them, you know. And so there wasn't any step that I could get up on, and Lee said, now wait, now I'll get a box for you to get up on. So he went across the yard, and he came back with an orange crate. Those orange crates then, they were like, they held a bushel on each side, I believe, and they were divided in the center with a wooden divider, and they were pretty sturdy. They were pretty heavy. So he laid one of those down there, and I crawled up on that to get into the house. And so that was about a month after we came to Florida. We hadn't been here very long. In fact, I wondered how they even knew that I was here. I never did find that out, how they knew that I was here and that I was a nurse. I don't know how they found that out. So they didn't have any medical care. You ask how they received medical care. Well, they didn't have any. It was non-existent for the black people, because if they did come to a doctor's office where I worked later, when I worked in the doctor's offices, they had to go to the back door, and I have seen them go back there and sit for 4 and 5 hours in the sun out on the step to wait to get in to see the doctor. They weren't allowed to come in the waiting room, and they weren't allowed inside the building until a doctor would go and bring them into the kitchen in the back door. And then they could come in there, and he would talk to them and sort of more or less fluff them off with a couple pills, you know. He didn't really ever give them any care. they didn't get any care. And of course, they never paid a bill. That was something they never did. They had innumerable insurance policies, the black people, that they paid $2 and $3 a week for through these insurance agents that would go out there and sell them insurance, which was really worthless. But they sort of took them for that, you know. And they did pay that insurance because they felt like it was a good thing, but it wasn't. It wasn't worth anything, really. And there wasn't any place for them to use it anyway. There was no hospital. They weren't allowed to go in a hospital. Of course, there wasn't any here anyhow, but there was one in Tampa for real serious surgical things. If they had to go to a hospital, they could go to Clara Frye in Tampa, which was all black hospital. But it closed shortly after the beginning of the 60s it closed. And it was around 64, 65 before the hospitals were integrated down here. And there was, in an extreme emergency, they could go over to Dade City, to the hospital there. I think it was called the East Pasco Hospital. And they would give them emergency treatment there for real serious things. But they couldn't go in to have a baby or anything like that. So they just had to fend for themselves, really. So that's when they got a hold of me, where they used all of my abilities to as much as they could, you know. And the houses were basically two-room shanties at that time, out there in the colored quarters, and they were really filthy, dirty places. They had no furniture. They had stoves, little wooden stoves, two burner jobs, you know, and usually they had three legs on. One leg would be off and it would be sideways, tipped on a couple of bricks or something like that, or stones that they'd have under it to keep it up so they could sit a pan of water on to heat. And then there'd be an old, dirty table in the kitchen. And usually they just sat on boxes or wooden chairs that were no legs, no backs, you know, just things like that. They had no sanitation. There was no water in the houses or anything like that. They had wells outside and they dragged the water in. And there was one bedroom. They had one kitchen, one bedroom. That was it. And in all the places that I saw, all the buildings I was in out there when I was there in the 40s, they just had the two rooms. And there was always only one bedroom and one bed. And I never could figure out that there'd be 8, 10, 15, maybe 15 people living in that two rooms, but there'd be one bed. And I don't know where they slept. There'd always be a great big pile of dirty clothes in the corner. They had no clothes closets. When they took off their clothes, they threw them down on the floor, I guess. And like Roy said, their clothes were always nice and white. That was one thing they liked to do, was wash. And they washed and they hung things out in the sun, I suppose, is why they were nice and white, you know, because they scrubbed them on scrub boards and then they hung them out in the sun. And it bleached them. But they did have nice white clothes, but the kids were always filthy dirty, and they had loads of worm problems with what do you call those worms that get in your legs? Not tapeworms. Ringworms. Yeah, that's it. I was trying to say ringworms. ringworms. They had loads of ringworms. They get that out of the sand, you know. And the kids would sit in the sand and play, and they would eat in the sand and everything. Of course, and they had other worms, too. They had pinworms, and they had, every time we ever did a sample in the lab on any of the kids when they were sick, they'd always come back just infested with worms. And so they had loads of worms, but they get these out of the sand. But the way they would go, they would put a bunch of grits or food, whatever. It was usually grits, just cold grits in a tin plate, like a pie tin. And they'd go out and sit in the sand and eat with their fingers. So, of course, you know, they got the sand, they got the worms from the sand and all that stuff in their system. They were all infested with worms. And there was one little girl out there who had asthma so bad that she just doubled up to the ground to get her breath. And we used to give her shots of aminophylline. And those were intramuscular. And so the doctor gave me a standing order that if he wasn't in town and she had one of those attacks, I could give her aminophylline. So I used to go out there even in the middle of the night and give her shots, and she couldn't breathe. So she grew up, and she got married. She outgrew, as they often do. They outgrow that asthma, you know, sometimes when they get older. And she did. I saw her when she was about 25 years old one day. And she had married and had two kids at that time of her own. She'd married a real nice fella from Tarpon Springs, and they had a real nice home out there. And she outgrew her problem. And I never knew of any other nurse in this area at the time that I was doing the work that went around here and did anything. There must have been some nurses somewhere, but if they were, I don't know where they were, because they didn't, any of them, make any appearance. And there was a nurse in Elfers that eventually we got a hold of that came in and took care of the patients at night after we started the clinic there, in the clinic at Ritchie Clinic on the corner of Delaware, you know, in the boulevard. Dr. Sprankle had that. And her name was Anna Gaines. And she came in and helped nights after we started the clinic. She was related to the Gaines family, you know, that you've read about. The Basil Gaines was the sheriff here. And that family, she was related to that family. Well, she's passed away now too, because she was older then too. And there was lots of segregation. There wasn't anything but segregation, because the school was segregated, and they had signs around the town in certain places where, you know, said, "Nigger, get out of town before the sun sets." And it just seemed to be an unwritten law that they knew that when it come sundown, they had to go home. And you'd never see a black in this town after 6 o'clock at night. But the women worked in town here, and the men worked in the packing house, basically. And so, Butler Laundry down here hired a lot of the blacks from the colored quarters. She used all black labor in the laundry there. And all the affluent people in town had a maid, you know, colored maid. They'd walk in. I remember one black woman, her name was Maggie, and she was crippled. It looked to me as if she'd had in her youth maybe a broken leg. It was never set. That's what it looked like. And she walked real, real crippled. And she used to walk all the way from Pine Hill in every day to work in one of the houses from one of the women. But and I delivered three or four of her daughter's children out there. And I don't know how Pine Hill ever got its name. It was just always called Pine Hill. I would think probably because there was so darn many pine trees out in that area, you know, when the blacks came there and settled, that they probably named it themselves, Pine Hill. I don't know. And I have a lot of friends out there, I think. I think Laura Birch is one of my friends. In fact, I see her in the store, and she always hollers at me and says hello. And they called me Ms. Obi, and they all talked to me. And Ellie Mae has always been a friend to both me and my husband. He did a lot of things for her. He used to fix her tires on her car and stuff like that. And the kids went to Clearwater if they wanted to go to high school, you know. After they got out of that school out there, they had to go to Clearwater. And Ellie Mae drove a bus. Well, it was so-called bus. It was a station wagon. You know, it held, I think, six, seven kids. And she used to take them back and forth every day to Clearwater in that station wagon bus to school. And I suppose she got paid for it. I don't know. I imagine the school, probably school board paid her. Because, and that was when she was all forever having trouble with that old bus. Thing, and she would come in and want Mr. Roy to put tires on it for her. Mr. Roy always did, and he never yet got paid for it. He was always going to get paid Saturday. Saturday never came. It was always next Saturday. Now next Saturday, I'm going to get some money, I'm going to pay you. Next Saturday never did come. And so now what else do you want to know, Joey? Oh yeah, we had plenty of those. We had a lot of babies born at Pine Hill. I had one born that was a stillborn. I had only one stillborn on all the time that I delivered babies out there, and that was Dr. Robeson's patient. He was out on the Gulf that day, and he wouldn't come in. He was fishing, and he got word that he was supposed to come in, but then, you know, they didn't care whether they came or not. He didn't bother to come. So I went out and met with Ellie Mae that had the stillborn. And that was the only one I ever had that was stillborn. And I tried so hard to save that baby. I did everything I could. I did artificial respiration. It looked pretty good when it first was born. And I did everything, but when I got home, I called the doctor and told him he should go out there. So he went out, and he told me the next day, he said, there wasn't anything you could have done or that I could have done had I been there. He said it was definitely, had been dead probably 2 or 3 days. So we're just lucky that she went ahead and had it, you know. But that was the only stillborn. And then Ellie Mae had one that was a preemie. It only weighed about, I could hold it in the palm of my hand, you know. I don't know what it weighed, maybe just a couple pounds. And I was afraid that it would never make it. And I said, Darren, I'm going to run in town and get some things to help with this baby. And I said, you keep it warm. I said, I laid it on her chest. And I said, now you keep this baby nice and warm and don't do anything till I get back. And I rushed in and I got some hot water bottles and a little thing that I could feed it with, you know, a dropper. I got things to make a tent so I could maybe keep it warm and things like that, and blankets. They didn't have blankets or anything else. And I got some nipples and things. I could give it some sugar water if I got it around or where it could do anything. And when I got back out there, she was sitting up in the bed nursing it. And it was just going glub, 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 eating like a little pig. And I says, oh my gosh, what are you doing, Ellie Mae? And she said, he was hungry, I was feeding him. So she fed him, and oh, he's about 6 feet six now, and he weighs probably 195 or 200 pounds. He grew up to be a great, big, tall, black person. So we had a lot of interesting things go on out there. Roy would go out, and they would sit around the tables, and they would want to make him coffee. And they'd insist on making him a cup of coffee, and they would be spitting, you know, in a can. They'd have all these women would just get around, and they would sing and holler and hoot, you know, and praise the Lord all the time she was having her pains, and they'd be spitting tobacco juice across the floor, and Roy'd say, I don't want any coffee. I don't drink coffee. Oh, Mr. Roy, you gotta have some coffee. You've been here all night long. No, I don't drink coffee. So it was interesting. So what else can I tell you, Joey?
That's about it.
If you think of anything else, I'll let you know.